Sound of Hockey episode 164, we're calling this one the Jiří Hudler episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, he had 164 career goals. You know, it's somebody I remember in his heyday, or kind of that was when I was really developing my fandom, kind of in the early 2000s. And then he played with Calgary. He played with Detroit 2003 to 2012, and then played with Calgary a bunch. And I remember him playing the Sharks. I remember him on Detroit. So I don't know. 164 goals sound like a good reason for
good round number
on our podcast. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I always mixed him up with Vern Fiddler.
Vern Fiddler, who also played with Detroit, and he played with the Stars. So it makes a lot of sense.
Well, didn't you say that Hudler played with the Flames?
He played with the Flames, but he also played for the Stars.
Okay, I missed that.
He played 32 games with the Stars, but I didn't call that out. He also played 19 with Florida, if we want to get thorough on the Jiří Hudler stats.
We don't need to. Yeah, we could probably leave
it at
that.
Okay, strike that from the record.
So those were 19 memorable games that he played there, too.
Bet it is, yeah. So this is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle. Be sure to follow us all on Twitter, and especially follow the @sound_hockey account, which has been just crushing it, if I do say so myself. Of course, I have no real rooting interest in that. That's just something that I have noticed, is that the account has been doing really well.
Independent.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, brilliant tweets. Just a lot of good laughs that I'm sure you'll get from reading that and following along. You get good insights during the games. So give it a follow. Kraken news. Speaking of games, the Kraken have been playing them a lot lately, especially at home. And most of them, they have been losing. So they have been on a 6-game losing streak, which was pretty painful, and was it 8 of 9, I believe? I think the only win came against Buffalo, and it was like 8 of 9. So then they finally won on Sunday night. We're recording on Monday night. They won on Sunday night against the Washington Capitals, a high-octane elite team. So certainly after seeing what happened on Friday night against Colorado, I didn't have particularly high hopes on Sunday. But, man, I guess we're going to get into all 3 games a little bit here. But the team played outstanding hockey on Sunday, earned the win in every sense of the word, took advantage of a team that was on second of back-to-backs. And, you know, we're going to dive into it more, aren't we? But I guess let's circle back first. Andy, yeah, what are you going to say? Go for it.
I'm going to push back on you saying that nobody expected them to win on Sunday, because I believe I told you at Morning Skate I had a good feeling about that game.
Sure, but you said you had a good feeling about the Colorado game, and they
got also true.
Spanked in that one.
I did, in fact, say that.
Yeah. So let's start with Chicago. That was a weird game because it was almost like a carbon copy of the Minnesota game. Like, it was basically same game over again. They, you know, had a decent first period, really slow, tight checking, pretty dull, somehow give up the only goal of the period because of course they do. And then second period, I don't really remember. How did that game play out? I know they lost. I'm confident they lost.
They were down 3-0.
Yeah, they fell behind 3-0. Yeah.
And they pushed back, yeah, but it didn't work out, and they got kind of Patrick Kane, kind of Marc-Andre Fleury, kind of Alex DeBrincat. What's the past tense of Alex DeBrincat?
DeBrincat.
So that was the Chicago game. Colorado game, man, I don't even know what to say about that one. It was a stinker in every sense of the word.
That was like the worst game that I've seen them play, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say they suck. It was more like they were just outmatched. And, you know, at one time they were down 7-0, and you're like, oh my gosh, this has got to be rock bottom. And I recall you mentioning something about being hitting rock bottom, didn't you?
Well, I was hopeful that it was rock bottom. So I have this belief, and I've watched a lot of, I don't know if you've heard this, I've watched a lot of Minnesota Wild hockey over the years. I don't know if I've ever told you guys that. But
team is this?
It's the team they're in the Central Division. They have a weird man-bear-pig as their logo. So it's half man, half bear, half pig. So cool. Yeah, so there's this tradition in Minnesota Wild hockey where they have this month long, they call it the swoon in the middle of the season, where they lose and lose and lose, and no matter how well they play, they can never win, and it's just the most miserable thing. And I don't know if they did that last season, but they definitely did when Mike Yeo was the coach. They do that every season, and Bruce Boudreau as well. And so what you have to see and what you have to look for is like baby steps in the right direction when they get into these losing streaks, right? And Mark Giordano kept talking about how they needed to grind out a win, figure out a way. I kept thinking that Grubauer had to steal a game. And the reason I thought that that was the case was because, you know, I think a big piece of the reason that they were on the losing streak was because the confidence was kind of shot, right? If they screwed something up, it always ended up in their net, right? Every single time it would end up in their net, that like, every time they made a mistake. So that's why I thought something had to happen where they had to bottom out though. And it has to be baby steps. You have to see them making little improvements and things just get kind of worse and worse and worse. And you have to hit this spot where you're like, holy crap, we could not have played any worse than we played that night. And now we all need to look in the mirror and be better. And I think that that happened after Colorado. And, you know, I was hopeful because there's always that opportunity for it to get even worse. You look at that game and you're like, oh my God, we're a horrible team. We can't win any games. And then it just gets snowball. So the fact that they did actually appear to have hit the bottoming out point there against Colorado is, I think it's a good thing. And clearly they did look at themselves in the mirror and get it turned around for Washington.
Well, before we move on to the Washington game, because that's what we really want to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that third period against Colorado. And, you know, I know the players have kind of mentioned something about it and you kind of reported on it a bit. The goals scored by the Kraken when they were down 7-0.
Yep.
And I was at the game. You guys were at the game. And Everly scored with like 6 minutes into the third. By then, you know, they were down 7-0. It felt ugly. And somebody in my row like left. They're like, I'm out of here. I can't watch this. But what was awesome, and you guys chime in with your own perspectives, is when they scored, it was like it was a tie game, right? In the arena, and the fans went crazy for them. And I thought that was so cool. And it kind of made me start to feel better because I was just like, kind of the thing, I hit rock bottom with the team. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is devastating. This is embarrassing. And not that, again, I don't think they played like horrendous. I just think Colorado's really good.
Well, and they're on a really hot streak too. One thing that people didn't really talk about was that I think they had scored in the four games total. It was like 7-6 goals, 4 goals, and then 7 goals again. I think they had like 23 or 24 goals in 4 games, so including the game against Seattle. So like they were on a big heater. You know, it's not like they're it's not like the Kraken are the only ones that are getting smoked by the Avalanche, because the Avalanche are really good, even though they don't have Nathan McKinnon, right? And even though they didn't have the greatest start to the season, we're starting to see, oh, the Avalanche are actually really good. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, when it's in the midst of a 6-game losing streak and everything looks like it's going wrong, it's pretty easy to look at the Kraken and be like, what are you guys doing wrong here, you know? So,
I agree. I know. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't like they were just, like, bumbling all over the place and tripping on each other. It wasn't like a clown show out there.
There was a play on a power play where Jared McCann and Ryan Donato ran into each other and a shorthanded goal ensued. So they were kind of bumbling a little bit. Okay.
Come on, Andy, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story here. Okay. So yeah, in the third, you know, Everly scores, then Tanev scores like 2 or 3 minutes later, and the crowd is just into it and rocking, right? And getting all excited. Blackwell adds one with like less than 5 minutes left. And it made me feel good. You know, sure, they scored, but no quit, right? Like, they're down 7-0. They had every legitimate reason to, like, just mail it in the rest of the way and kind of just let the clock run down and get out of there as soon as you can. But no, they were scoring goals, and that's one thing that Allison pointed out last week on the pod is there's no quit in this team, right? They keep coming back, and that's something that, you know, as a fan, I'm really happy about. Like, they, you know, who knows? They might not make the playoffs, but, man, they've got a team that fights and never quits. And
yeah.
You got to respect that a lot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, my take on that Colorado game is obviously Colorado is the better team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're considered, you know, contenders for the cup for a reason. But I did think that Seattle played poorly throughout that game from the start to the, I guess, to when they started scoring in the third.
You know, interestingly, I just want to pause for 1 second there. I actually thought their first period, in that one, they gave up 2 goals. But I thought it was a little better than the Chicago game and the Minnesota game where there was no offensive pushback at all. In that game against Colorado, they actually did have some push offensively. Obviously, they didn't score, and Driedger gives up 2 goals, right? You know, two chances and 2 goals is essentially what happens in the first period. So I thought that it wasn't that bad. But then second period, the wheels came completely off the wagon.
Bad, yeah.
And that was where I was like, oh, my God, what is going on here?
So, yeah. And the second period is really what I'm talking about the most. But the fans were amazing in that game, like John was talking about, you know, because those were, I mean, to me, at first I'm thinking, well, these are just garbage time goals. Like, who cares? Colorado doesn't care. They're not going to lose this game. But the fans, it was like it was a tie game the way they reacted. I was kind of amazed. I'm like, first of all, I don't think very many people left. I mean, I'm sure there were some, as the guy in John's row did, but it wasn't like en masse. Like, sometimes you see when a blowout happens and you just see like all these people get up at the same time and like make their way towards the exits, you know, to beat traffic. I didn't see that at all. And that, I was just like, man, look at these fans. They're still having fun in a 7-0 game, or except when it was 7-1. They cheered that goal as if it was, they just tied it up. And that was pretty incredible. And a lot of the players the next day or the next morning skate talked about that. Like, man, you know, we got to play better for these fans. Like, it actually kind of, I think, motivated the Kraken a little bit. Like, these guys, these people are supporting us so well.
Yep.
And I was at the Colorado post game stuff, and Eric Johnson mentioned it. He's like, man, that crowd tonight, like, they were still cheering during a blowout. I've never seen anything like that. So, I mean, they were impressed by it as well. Yeah. Cool. So, I think the fans had maybe more of an impact than the Kraken did in that game. But but it was amazing. And then, you know, to jump ahead a little bit, the crowd on Sunday was incredible from start to finish. So they really are creating a pretty good home ice advantage there.
Yeah. Not to continue to just ram on the same subject here, but I noticed that, like, you know, they scored the first goal. I'm like, why are people reacting this way? Like, this is this is bonkers, right? And so I actually asked Mark Giordano after that, and it feels kind of weird to ask a question about how great the crowd was, you know, in a 7-3 loss. You know, like, that's a weird question to ask, but I was like, you know, did you guys notice that? And here's what he said to that question.
It was pretty cool to see our fans at the end of the game stay and cheer for us off the ice. I mean, we're obviously not happy with that effort in the second, but we made sure that we weren't going to lose the third period in there. We went in there with making a commitment to each other that we're going to play the right way, and it's pretty cool that they stayed and cheered for us. I mean, I think it says a lot about the fans in this building for sure.
So, like, that's a very heartfelt thing, right? He clearly did notice it. He clearly did, like, it meant something to him as a player, you know? And they talked about it also in the post game against Washington, and maybe we'll jump ahead to Washington now, right? But they were saying, like, our fans deserved more after that game, right? Philip Grubauer joked that he's played in places where they'd throw beer cans at him if they performed like that, like, you know, like how they did on Friday. And so, you know, you heard it there from Giordano, right? Like, the people stayed and cheered us on all the way off the ice, and like, we didn't deserve that, you know? So, like, that's the thing is, like, I think it actually did stick with them. Like, we got to do better, not just for ourselves, not just for each other, but for these people that are spending a lot of money to come to these games. Like, these are still very, very expensive games. Some people may only get to go one time, right? And if it's your one game that you go to and the team stinks and gives up 7 goals, right? Like, that's a bummer. So, you know, I'm sure that the players feel that and have a lot of pride and want to do better for the fans. So, okay, so let's go ahead and jump ahead to Washington. Here's one thing that I want to say is, even through this whole losing streak, and it's funny because coming into this thing, I was like, you know, I'm excited to be covering a team in the building, all that good stuff, in the press conferences. I'm super pumped about that. But I'm also a little worried about the fact that it's an expansion team, because what if they totally stink and we end up having to, like, go in and ask questions on, you know, nights when they lose, night after night after night. And we started to get a taste of that. Well, not started. We got a taste of that, right, over these last couple of weeks. And I got to tell you, even with the team losing, and maybe this is an offshoot of the fans having so much fun, even though the team is getting smoked, like, I'm having a blast doing this, right? Like, I'm having such a great time, even with the losses piling up and the team not doing well and all this stuff, right? It's still, like, just this incredible experience. And so I'm like, you know what? I don't even really care. Like, I'm just having a good time. And then they win against Washington, and I'm like, holy crap, that's so much better. It was like night and day how different I felt after that. Like, it's just so much more fun to be in the room after they've won and they have some good feelings for the first time in a while. And I mean, being in the building on Sunday was like, it was memorable. Like, it was a incredible experience.
Everybody's in a better mood after a win.
100%. Okay, so let's talk about the games. So, of course, 3 minutes in, they give up the go-ahead goal, right?
Yep.
Here's where it differs, though, for me, and I know that everybody talked about this after the game, too, but, you know, those goals that they've been giving up, and that's been so, like, just killing to the confidence and to the momentum. Are those goals exactly like we thought Connor McMichael was about to score? I think it was about 10 minutes into the game. Mm-hmm. I think it was Oleksiak made a pass to Geeky at the point, and it was kind of this weird like handcuffing pass, and McMichael jumps on it, rushes through the neutral zone, like partial breakaway, gets a good shot away, and that one, like 100% of the time this season, that shot goes in, except for on Sunday against the Washington Capitals, right? Grubauer makes the save, and that to me is the turning point in the game. I think that's where the Kraken start to really push back. They get a power play goal later in the game. They score three goals in the second. Huge pushback by Washington in the third, which is exactly what you would expect, right? I mean, they're freaking Washington. They've lost two regulation games all season. But what was incredible was like seeing the players just sell out, right? Like, think about Tanev skates through and blocks a shot with the outside of his leg. Giordano's blocking shots. Like, everybody's blocking shots, you know, and they're just like throwing their freaking faces in front of the puck, whatever they can do to try to help Grubauer out.
Yeah, Larson looked a little hurt too.
Yeah, he went down the tunnel for a little bit at the end of the game, but he did do the post-game presser, which if he's, you know, actually hurt, he wouldn't have done that presser, I don't think so. But anyway, the point is these guys played so hard, and you could tell that they were so desperate to get a win and so badly wanted to hold on to that thing after they had built a lead in the second period and really played for each other and for the fans, as we mentioned, right? But yeah, what were your guys' thoughts on it? I thought it was just an unbelievable night, and man, winning really is way more fun than losing.
Well, the first goal was, I mean, everything that had been plaguing them, right? It was a turnover behind the net by Lazan. He kind of, you know, whiffed on a pass and then kind of fumbled it. And I believe it was Kuznetsov who got it out in front to Wilson for a goal. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, oh, God, here we go again. Yeah. You know, they make a turnover, you know, and it's in the back of the net. And as McMichael was skating down the ice, I thought they're going to be down 2-0 again. This is exactly like Colorado, or, you know, exactly like all the games that they've struggled in. And I did think that was a big moment. I think Hacksaw talked about it after the game, how that really did, you know, build into what they did the rest of that period, that they were able to get the push back, and there was a big PK at the end of that first period, and then they kind of rolled into the second period with all kinds of momentum, and I think that was huge. You know, I felt bad for Lozon on that, because then he took a penalty after that, but I rewatched the game this morning, and he actually played a really good game. He was out there against the Ovechkin line a lot, really held his own. You know, I think they were pretty much even in all the analytics against a really good line. It's just funny how that didn't sink him, right? Where in games past, that might have really sunk your confidence. Like, oh, man, I made a turnover, and it ended up in the back of the net 2 seconds later. So I think that first period was really key in that game. And, you know, Grubauer was probably the best game I think he's played this year with the Kraken.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Just from start to end, and not only that save, that breakaway, but I mean, how many wild, mad scrambles were there in front of the net that he made? That he found the puck, and I was impressed with how the defense and the forwards, like, you know, collapsed onto the net and found those loose pucks and got them out before somebody from the Capitals did. Because that's also been, seems like those always end up in the net as well during that losing streak. So I think just all around, I think they really all bought in. You heard people talking about looking in the mirror and all that kind of stuff. I guess they had a meeting the day before to just kind of talk about things. So all that paid off, and then you hope that it'll continue now.
Yep. It's interesting you bring up Lazan, because that is in my notes to myself about Lazan, because obviously he had the turnover that caused the first goal. But if you look at right before that, there was a couple other misplays that got him to that point. So he was kind of handed the puck in a tough position when it should have been cleared like two plays earlier. And then he took the interference call, and I'm like, oh boy, this is, you know, the Hayden Fleury where he's going to be sitting next game. But then I looked at, and then he actually had another penalty in the third. Yeah. And, you know, I was starting to kind of go, well, and I checked his stats, and man, he's playing a lot of minutes, and clearly he's kind of flying under the radar a little bit, right? He's kind of been one of the more stable defensemen back there for one of the young guys. And so clearly Hakstol believed in him too, which was pretty cool, right? They didn't limit his minutes. His minutes actually went up by period.
Yep.
So even after kind of a tough first period, he started to play more.
They're using him in a shutdown defenseman role. You look at almost night after night, he's playing against the top line. So the competition is tougher. Even the game that they split him and Adam Larson up, because they've been together a lot this year. But there was one game, I forget if it was the Chicago game or the Minnesota game, but they split him up.
It was the Colorado game, actually, which is telling, right?
Might have split him up for a couple of games. But the first game they split him up, I think it was Minnesota, because he was still out there against Kaprizov. Lazan was without Larson. Which said a lot to me that, okay, so even without his normal partner, they still look at him as a guy that can compete against those top guys. And I agree that he's been flying under the radar. And, you know, you look at his numbers and they may not be as high as others, but he's also going against tougher competition every night.
Right, yeah.
Well, and I don't think they're looking for him to score goals either, right? They're looking for him to try to stop the other team's best players from scoring goals. So
I'm talking about like his analytics, the fancy stats. Against the Capitals, you know, he was like just below 50% in all the possession numbers. But he was, you know, you look at who he was playing against. He was out there against, you know, Ovechkin's line most of the night. I believe 11 of his 18 minutes were against Ovechkin, if I remember what I looked up this morning. But and that just shows you like that those are tougher minutes, and he's holding his own there.
And just a couple other notes from the game is two players got off the snide on Sunday, and that was Adam Larsson, who's not expected to score a lot of goals, but Cale Järnkrok, another Swede, got off the snide as well with a goal in the second period, which was a pretty big goal at the time and a pretty one at that. So, you know, Järnkrok's not like a huge goal scorer, but he should be contributing. He can score, obviously, and we've been kind of expecting a little bit more from him. He's been playing solid, and we even talked about him last week on the podcast with Allison.
Yep.
And another note is they were 1-for-1 on the power play last night and scored on a 6-on-5 during the delayed penalty. But their power play is 5 for the last 10 in their last 3-plus games. Yeah. So I'm checking my notes, and 50% is a pretty good rate for the power play. And a lot of that has to do with Marcus Johansson. Ever since he got back and played in that Vegas game and had an assist, I believe, on their first power play, the power play has been clicking since then. He's been an impact player there.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, maybe it's not like all Johansson, right? But I think that
it's all Johansson. Right.
He came in. He was fresh-minded. It wasn't in his head about the power play because he hadn't been there for a while. Mm-hmm. He'd been out injured. He makes a good play and gets the whole team off the snide, right? Like they all are like, oh, okay, we can score on the power play.
We're allowed to.
But he might have been kind of the catalyst to that. So, but you're absolutely right. Like he has had a big role. They put him in the net front spot and he's been helpful. They're clicking. They're starting to score. Last piece of Kraken news before we move on. And I always say last piece, but you know, we're going to bring it back to the Kraken at some point in the episode. But there's a mascot apparently coming. Uh-oh. We have some breaking news. John, where are you getting this insider info?
Yeah. So Molly Shen from Como News did a piece, Kraken merchandise sales this year, and is speaking to minority owner Jay Doyle. Who's got the merchandising rights for the Kraken, and he revealed a mascot is coming. Now, I heard from multiple people that a mascot is coming, but no word on timing for it. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe next homestand. Mm-hmm. Who knows? So, you know,
what's your guy's name, Andy? Slippy the Sea
Urchin? I was just going to talk about him. The reason we haven't heard it yet, and this is just my not knowing anything about anything, but I'm pretty sure it's true, even though I don't know it's true. And that's that. It takes a while to you know, negotiate the rights for Sigmund the Sea Monster from whatever network was that created that show. You can't just roll out Sigmund the Sea Monster. So you got to like make sure it's all legal.
Can't
wait.
I'd imagine he's pretty elusive anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Like, wouldn't you? He's not just like
as a
hanging
monster,
out, like
Sea Monster. Yeah.
He's very friendly.
Allegedly.
Well, that's what got him in trouble, because the other sea monsters wanted to scare off all the people on the beach, but he wanted to be friends with everybody. That was
if you say so, Andy.
That was the basic plot line of that series.
Yeah, I saw you make the quotation marks around friends there. I know what you're doing. We don't have a down on the farm this week, so I won't make any kind of animal noises at this point. But we do have a update from the desert. A fan and volunteer was interviewed about the Firebirds and I guess what they mean to the community down there or something. I'm not really sure what the interview was about. But it says this person, Shad Powers, says Biv and Undersell on Grant Fear's credentials, but he does look good in that Firebirds gear. It's a still frame of Grant Fear and it literally says underneath him, Firebird fan and volunteer.
Oh my God.
Which is amazing.
And oh, by the way, Hall of Fame goalie.
And friend of the pod.
That's right.
Can't forget that. Cannot forget that. It's very akin to when, remember, Jerome McGinley was like out helping people with their cars that were stuck in the snowstorm.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, local man talks about the weather in Boston.
That also happened in Vancouver when the Weather Channel interviewed Robert Luongo, who was out jogging in the sunny weather. had no idea who he was. I saw somebody wearing a Firebirds hat on Saturday. I was kind of shocked, but that's pretty good. They just put on sale. Somebody already got one.
So looking ahead now, remember I said that was our last piece of Kraken news. Already we're back to Kraken news. We haven't considered who they're playing next. So on Wednesday, they got Carolina. So that's obviously a really tough matchup. Florida after that, in Florida. And then don't they have Tampa Bay as well?
Yeah. I think it's Tampa Bay and then Florida.
Okay. And oh, and those are back to backs, aren't they?
Yep. Friday Tampa, yep. Saturday Florida.
Friday, Saturday. Great Thanksgiving Day weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally Buffalo. So hopefully they can get one win in that group and it will be against Buffalo.
I hope they get more. Yeah, and one of them is Buffalo. Yes.
Yeah. I just remembered one more thing, by the way. Are you guys at all concerned? Because, well, I mean, clearly this team has kind of showed that, like, they need to play really, really good hockey to beat some of these really good teams. But, like, think about how they played on Sunday night against Washington. Like, they put it all on the line like it was a playoff game, right? And that was how they had to play to beat Washington, which I don't imagine that it is that hard for other teams to win games. And maybe things get easier once you start feeling it a little bit and you start having some confidence. But, like, that was a very hard fought win. And I just wonder, like, how sustainable is that? Like, can they actually play like that every night? Can they actually throw themselves in front of every shot and grind it out the way that they did? I don't know. I just, that was one thing that I took away from that game.
Aren't they built for that? I mean, that's what they at least envision.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
this was like another level though. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Like that was not a regular season effort that they put forth. You know, it was like, we are desperate. We got to win tonight.
I do recall Vegas playing a lot like that. You know, it was a bunch of kind of, you know, that's where the misfits come through, where they're just like, you know, kind of F you, we're going to play like hell and win games. And because you guys gave up on us. I just remember that early season. And then they would get confident and develop like more chemistry. And all of a sudden their teams like almost were afraid to play them. They played like at a playoff level all season, or at least certainly the first half of the season.
And speaking of Carolina, Ethan Bear is in COVID protocol. He had a confirmed positive test, which is kind of a bummer because he was going to be here in Seattle. And I know, Andy, you are pretty excited to see him back in the market.
Yeah, I was actually going to talk to him for a story after their practice on Tuesday, but that's now been...
That's a double bummer then.
Yeah, so it would have been a great story, some good content we'd have on the site, but that's been X'd out now.
All right.
So he will not be available. Which is really a bummer because they don't. It's not a Western Conference or a division team that we're going to have another chance to see here until next year. So
or it's Stanley Cup Final.
Stanley Cup Final. Yeah, that's when we'll see him. So then it'll be
a good prediction.
Story.
That's a good prediction. Somebody write that down. We are making that comment at episode 164, right around the 27-minute mark here, 29-minute mark, something like that. So just make a note of that for when the Stanley Cup Final happens.
Yeah, there are some other Northwest connections, which I think we're going to get into a little bit later, so I won't spoil them now with Carolina. That will be available, so
yeah.
Okay.
We can look forward to that.
Well, okay. Instead, it's now time for Sound of Hockey's 3 Stars. John, your star of the week.
My star is Seth Jarvis, friend of the pod from 2 summers ago, I believe. Leading up to the draft, we interviewed him. He is playing his first year with the Carolina Hurricanes, and he had a goal in 3 games in a row. So 1 goal in 3 games in a row, playing hot. And it was just announced that he will be playing his 10th game with the Carolina Hurricanes this week, which will mean he burns his first year of eligibility, which means he will stay with Carolina the full year. So yeah. Jarvis was funny on the pod, if you remember, and he's having a pretty good year, you know, not like lighting it up, but he's sticking with the team at a 20-year-old, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, yep. He's 19.
Well, he will be 20.
Well, yeah, he'll be 30 at some point too, but he's 19.
Maybe.
He's a 19-year-old. He's considered a 19-year-old. This is a 19-year-old season.
That was messed up, John. Anyway, yeah, it's cool that he's doing that. He's sticking with the team. I mean, I know usually those young kids do get sent back even when they play well, right? Mason McTavish, we saw him score for the Ducks against the Kraken. He got sent back. So, yeah, awesome stuff there by Seth Jarvis.
What I'm most impressed with on Jarvis is that he's playing on the wing with Sebastian Aho on their top line, which at 19 is pretty good. You know, obviously that helped maybe with some of the numbers, but I think what's more impressive is that he's fitting in. He's not like dragging that line down, right? He's not, you know, showing that he's not ready to play with that high level caliber player. So that to me is one of the more impressive things about his start.
Mm-hmm. Andy, your star of the week.
My star of the week was just in town, but we didn't get to see him play. And that's goaltender Ilya Samsonov of the Washington Capitals.
Samsonite.
No, his name's Samsonov.
Oh, Okay. I thought it was Samsonov, but that's all right.
Anyways, thankfully he didn't play on Sunday because he played the night before in San Jose and shut the Sharks out 4-0. But that was his second straight shutout. So he's not given up a goal in quite a long time now. And, you know, I think they're kind of splitting time with him and Vanecek, but man, Samsonov's red hot. And again, thankfully that was a back-to-back night, so we didn't have to deal with him.
Right. But there was, to me, a question, because that is like one of the rare exceptions that coaches will make, is if a goalie's coming off of a shutout, sometimes they'll let him play again in the back-to-back.
Yeah, yep.
So I was like, I'm curious to see if they'll let Samsonov go again. But instead, they let Vitek Vanecek get his big triumphant return to Seattle. Yeah, revenge night. But really, you know what that was, though? The Washington game? That was Tim Ohashi revenge night. That's why the Kraken won.
I know, so, for sure. Yeah.
It also turned out to be a Dennis Cholowski revenge because he played his first game. Played his first game of the year on Sunday against the Kraken.
Well, see, that's what the Capitals get for claiming him off waivers, is that's they right. get a loss. So, hey, my star of the week is Cale Järnkrok. So, John, you already totally ruined this for me. But really, it's not so much a star of the week. It's really like star of one night because he had just 2 points. But the reason that I wanted to mention this is because he came into that game on Sunday literally with 0 points on the whole season. He gets an assist early in the second. Then he scores, like you said, a beautiful goal where he kind of takes a pass from Schwartz, the neutral zone, goes in, cuts hard to the middle, and rifles it into the top corner. Like, beautiful, beautiful goal. But he looked so different after he got that assist early on. Like, he got the point, right? And I'm like, oh, that's an assist for Cale Järnkrok. That's his first point. That's awesome. So then because of that, I was kind of watching him, and I was like, this dude is flying out here. Like, he was all over the place, looked so confident after getting that 1 point. So I'm kind of hopeful that he's going to really pick it up.
I like his game.
He's more of a more of a two-way guy. But, I mean, nonetheless, like, it was remarkable how big of a difference it clearly had on his confidence just to get 1 point on the board. And I asked him the other day, I was like, you know what, how do you think your game is progressing? And he's like, oh, I can be a lot better. Like, he seemed like he was pretty down on himself, just like, you know, I'm not there. I'm not where I want to be. So it just was really good to see him get some points and be impactful and have impact after being impactful on a win. So that's it. That's our three stars. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer. Dion Phaneuf has retired from the NHL. I thought that he had retired like 5 years ago.
No, 2019 is the last time he played. So you're not that far off.
All right. That's it? That's all we got?
Well, I mean, you know, he was a good hockey player, right? He played over 1,000 games, had close to 500 points. And across 14 seasons, like, he was a good hockey player. I think he kind of got a raw deal in Toronto.
Yes.
It's tough to play in Toronto and like, they wanted to run him out of town when things weren't going.
There's always a whipping boy. Always a defensive whipping boy. There was a stretch for Phaneuf where he was like the defenseman in the NHL, right? Yep. Maybe it was only a couple seasons. Yep. But it was like, oh man, this guy is just unbelievable. Like, he's the guy. Everyone was kind of scared of him. He's a big hitter. He was offensively talented. So yeah, good career by Dion Phaneuf. Hangs it up. Our next weekly one-timer. Fenway Sports Group is planning to buy the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yes.
That's all we have to say about that.
Well, you know, Fenway Sports is, I mean, it's probably obvious, but they're the owners of the Boston Red Sox. But they also own Liverpool FC, which I believe is from the Premier League, assuming they still call it that, and they're still in there.
Big soccer fan, John?
Huge. I did read a soccer book. Oh, it was actually pretty cool, but it's called The Club, by the way, but on the business side of it, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we just lost a lot of listeners, by the way, because of your inability to say, like, know who Liverpool is.
But no, anyway, I know who Liverpool is, but I don't know. Are they still in the Premier League? Because some of them can get demoted, right?
Yes, Liverpool is a huge club.
I know they're huge, but can't they fall out of it?
They can get demoted.
They can be regulated, or whatever they call it.
Relegated.
Regulated's
good, too.
Regulated. They're also regulated, but yeah, they can be relegated. But
are they regulated?
Speaking of Liverpool, I was flipping channel Saturday, and I came across a Liverpool-Arsenal game. And just as I turn it off, the Liverpool, I guess they call them managers, right? They're not coaches. The Liverpool manager
and
the
Arsenal sacked?
And it just nearly came to blows. Wow. Like, I turned it on, and they're just in each other's faces pointing, and I was like, whoa, what's going on here? They both got yellow cards.
one barely grazed the other, and he like dove to the ground.
Oh, hey.
Just kidding, just kidding. No, I lost us some more listeners. All right,
that was a little.
Let's move on. Yeah,
some soccer sophistication to the show, and you guys just crapped all over it.
Yeah, with your regulation.
It's been rumored for a while, and Ron Burkle's kind of the money behind the ownership group. I mean, Mario Lemieux is obviously part of the ownership group, and he's kind of the face of the franchise, but Ron Burkle's kind of the money guy. But he's been rumored to be selling this for a while, so this doesn't surprise me.
Got it. Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh! Ooh, that was a robust one-timer. Braden Point has been injured, and he is out indefinitely. Obviously, that's a big hit, but I'm sure this will work out for the best for Tampa Bay because they'll get some cap savings.
Well, so. And let's not forget that Seattle is playing Tampa soon. So that's true. Might be a good thing for Seattle. So.
It helps. Everything helps.
Although you're sorry to see the guy get injured. Yes. Have to say
I like Braden Point. He's a good player. Yeah.
Our next weekly one-timer. New Jersey has released their new jerseys. But the jerseys say Jersey on them.
That's all it says.
Yep, that's it. And these are not great. They're black and they have just like white stripes on them, on the sleeves and on the shoulders. And they're not great. I don't even like the look of them.
Is it a joke? Is it an inside joke? That was my first thought. Are they doing this on purpose to try and be funny?
Maybe. Maybe they're throwing people off. It could
maybe,
be. But
maybe.
It doesn't feel like that. It feels like this is what the jersey's actually going
to
be.
They look bad. They look bad.
Yeah.
They're bad. And it's akin to the – I hate the Tampa Bay Lightning jerseys that say Bolts on them.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, I just hate stuff like that where they, like, put a nickname or something. I don't do well with that in general. But then when you also write what the article of clothing is on the front of it, like that's
it's almost like a placeholder, right? Like, okay, this is our demo. We're just gonna write Jersey mm-hmm. on there for now.
Well,
I'm surprised
I'm
you didn't
usually
say logo here.
Yeah. I'm usually a no bad ideas guy, but this is a bad idea. Let's be clear.
Also, Darren, you just used the word akin for like the third time on this podcast. What's up with that?
I don't know. It's
akin He gets royalties.
Yeah, no, it's akin to repeating the same Sigmund the Sea Monster joke that we've had before.
True.
So,
yeah.
You know, sometimes I run out of material. I mean, we've been doing this freaking podcast about a team that didn't even exist for
sometimes
what, three
on
years.
The very same podcast. Yeah,
You know what? Let's go back to some Indiana Jones references. by the way, I'm going to let you in on a little secret here, and you may have figured it out already, but I was recently doing the tweeting from the Sound of Hockey account. It wasn't Wade on this particular night. Uh-huh. But so I did a reference to Austin Powers from there. I said, there are two things in this world that scare me, and one of them is Alex Ovechkin winding up from the left circle on a power play. And then somebody responded and said, I bet Andy hates this masterpiece as well. And that was a reference to Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. And then somebody else said, all right, and what's the other thing? And I said it was Barney's, Barrnies, which is like John Barr's fans. And I said,
is that a thing?
I don't know if I have fans.
Small hands smell like cabbage. So
yeah. I don't have
it's
any
like Barney's. I don't know if you guys even get that reference or not. That's a kind of a deep cut from Austin Powers.
Oh,
I've never seen Austin Powers. Well, I'm going to take that to my grave for sure.
All right. Well.
Well, to answer that guy's question, I enjoyed the first Austin Powers.
Yeah,
if that's what he's referencing. The
they spiraled.
I enjoy the sequels as much as I enjoy a dead horse being flogged. It was just the same jokes, just over and over and over again. It's like we get it.
All right. Speaking of flogging a dead horse, our next weekly one timer.
I don't know if this is a good one.
You gonna do the sound, John? Okay, thank you. The Omaha Lancers, well, a Lancer would probably be somebody who, like, rides a horse, right, with his lance. Uh-huh. So you could kind of see how that segue worked a little bit. Of the USHL, the Omaha Lancers, they are in some serious turmoil. Apparently, they're going through some financial woes, as a lot of lower-level teams have been, well, developmental league teams, I should say, are going through. And they've done these kind of crazy budget cuts. And with the budget cuts have come, like, They've fired the coach. They've at one point they were talking about having an injured player be like the assistant coach for a while. There's all kinds of crazy allegations going around. John, I think you're a little bit more well-read on the situation, so I'll kick it over to you to tell us what's happening in the USHL with the Omaha Lancers.
Yeah, it was. It's really kind of weird. Basically, they hired a coach, but then didn't have a replacement. And then USA Hockey rules, like, you need coaches to coach games, like, of kids. So it turns out they asked him to come back for a couple games. And then after those couple games, he left the organization. And then the team kind of started to say, oh, he left, he resigned, he stepped down. And the players are like, what the hell is going on here? And turns out he did not step down. He was let go. And so the players ended up sitting out or threatening to boycott games. And the USHL ended up canceling a couple games over the weekend. There's still a lot going on. There's independent investigations going here. Like, it turns out, like, video budgets were cut. All these things to help these players develop in this development league, the USHL, which is just a notch down from the WHL or some of the other CHLs. So there's still some things to be kind of sussed out. The president was kind of put on leave, administrative leave, while they do all this investigation. They're still going to kind of put a team together. So I think there's a lot more to know and learn about this situation. But at the root of it, you're right, it's kind of like related to budget cuts. And it's just making this experience for these players who are counting on playing in the USHL to hopefully go to college or maybe even play pro hockey at some stage. But this is a big moment for them. And to kind of, you know, handicap them this way, it's really challenging for their development, which causes the issue. So we'll kind of monitor this. I'm hoping kind of things get sussed out, but you know, it's something that hopefully USHL is taking seriously here.
That wraps up our weekly one-timers. Whoosh. And we close the show with our tweets of the week. I'm going to go first this week. Usually I kick it over to you guys. I'm going to go first. I'm just going to do it. Executive decision. Cool. I had a couple of these that went around this week, but I think it needs to be brought up. So somebody, DJ Bean, responded to the tweet of the jersey, and they said, honestly, the jersey looks fine with the rest of the uniform. And it's a picture of red breezers or pants, and it just says pants on that, like where the logo would go. So, which I think is pretty funny.
God, I hope they do that.
Have we talked about the use of breezers before?
No, I don't. Well, maybe we have, but it's been at least like a year. Probably.
Can you explain what breezers are for everybody that lives outside of Minnesota?
It's the same thing as, like, we say duck, duck, gray duck, right? Nobody else says that. Everyone says duck, duck, goose. So I don't know where that comes from,
duck,
but
duck, gray duck.
That's the game that we played growing up. We played duck, duck, gray duck. We did not play duck, duck, goose. If you were the gray duck, you had to chase the other
weird
ducks.
It's the goose, man. You run if you're the goose.
Not if you're growing
gray
up.
Duck.
You guys asked me. You asked me.
I did.
Don't know. This is,
I asked
this
about
is what
the breezers.
Piece, yeah. I know. This is what the piece of equipment was called for me growing up. They were breezers. So, Andy, your tweet of the week, please.
My tweet of the week comes from the Carolina Hurricanes, the lovable jerks, mm-hmm. who are coming to town. And as we talked about with Seth Jarvis, they tweeted out a gif of their lining up to come out on the ice. You know, every team kind of lines up and does all their little handshakes and stuff. And in this gif, there's, you know, Canes players lined up on each side of the hallway, and Seth Jarvis runs right through the middle of them and then runs back the other way. And the tweet says, running to find an apartment in Raleigh. So now he must be staying cool. for a while. Yeah. So
awesome. I love that.
Although I refer to them as gifs, but that's okay.
Whatever. Uh-huh.
If
you live in Minnesota, you call it a gif, a gray duck gif.
The maker of those originally calls them GIFs. So, Andy, you might be right on that. Yeah. John, your
Got
tweet
me.
Of the week.
Mm-hmm. My tweet of the week comes from Connor Carrick, who is a property of the Seattle Kraken playing.
Kraken legend.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Down on the farm.
Well, I don't think he's ever played a game, but he played for the Charlotte Checkers. And. Okay. Now we've lost a lot of people now.
Do a gray duck.
Hey, I got to go play hockey, by the way. Okay, I got to play hockey. Seriously?
Okay. All right, let's go.
Connor Carrick says, want to watch Kraken Caps game, but am subject to blackout. That's the tweet. Mm. Where do we go from here? Yeah. And a lot of people love to complain about blackout rules, but those are the rules. He was actually playing in Hershey, which is the TV market for the Washington Capitals, which is why it was blacked out.
Right.
This shouldn't come out as any surprise to anybody who's had out of town TV packages before, because that's what happens. But anyway, I thought it was funny that it came from Connor Carrick, maybe future friend of the pod. Who knows?
Yep. Who knows? Hey, let's close this out quickly because John has to go play hockey, as we've heard. Thank you again for listening. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. And we will talk to you all next week for episode 165. Cheers.